¿Qué hubo, familia? ¿Nos extrañaron? We're back. Y más Jotos than ever. Somos
Joaquín, Charlie
y Alejandro. And we're
the three brown Jotos. It's season three and we're getting back into the desmadre, spilling all the tea on life, sex, health, and everything in between.
Amigues, agarren sus bebidas, sus chucherías y suban el volumen porque se va a armar.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Three Brown Jotos. My name is Charlie.
I'm Joaquin.
And I'm Alejandro.
And today we have a very special guest, a guest whom I met at the Queer Mercado. So shout out to the Queer Mercado. Actually, when I walked in, you were singing to No Diggity. In a white coat. So I'm like, who is this guy?
There was karaoke going on?
Yeah, or no, I think he was doing a full-on performance. Okay. Not karaoke.
I feel like after getting to know you, I feel like you were like, hey, by any chance, you don't need me to perform No Diggity real quick? Like,
I'm right.
Like, I got something to say.
Yeah. But no, I'm excited about this episode because we've been wanting to have a medical doctor on our podcast. And finally, we found one that fits our aesthetics, our vibes. So without further ado.
Aesthetics.
Yeah. Without further ado, Dr. Homie, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Dr. Homie, beautiful people. So thank you for having me. I'm glad that you actually introduced me as a medical doctor because I frequently get the question on whether or not I am actually a doctor. I did my medical school out in UCLA and my residency in East LA at White Memorial. Oh. Essentially pretty much all from Southern California, although I moved around a lot. I was from Long Beach, San Pedro, Torrance, Chula Vista, Imperial Beach, San Isidro. So I've been around.
Okay.
You and not in that way.
Right? It's okay, doctor. You could do that too here. It's a safe space.
I understand that.
Well, with all that moving, it sounds like you kind of were bouncing from place to place. Was medical school or medicine your ultimate goal when you were younger?
Interestingly enough, no, not at all, actually, because, with the money issues that we had, a lot of the social issues we had, I didn't really have much of a perception outside of those issues. My mom is the youngest of 14.
Okay.
So wow. I know, right? They get be getting busy up in the Philippines, Joe. When you don't got money, what else are you going to do?
Yeah,
and having that extra kids. And this is just like TJ too, because I've been there enough, but like the more kids you got, the more workers you got.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
so, being the young, my mom being the youngest of 14, I'm like the second to youngest cousin. And, unfortunately, I wasn't able to get a whole lot of input in regards to how to really reach this far. I am definitely the first doctor in my bloodline.
Okay.
By the time I was in high school, like I had zero thoughts that I'd actually be able to go to college. I always thought doctors were cool. I don't know if you guys remember like those surgeries, like liposuctions that they do on Discovery Channel and they like air them. I used to love those.
Me too. Oh my God, I can't watch. That's boring for me.
When they cut people up. Yeah.
No,
that's what I'm talking about. Everyone thought I was gross, but I was like,
I cannot. That is like way too much.
I mean,
sitting there watching it, eating something.
I turn around, I can't even look. I'm like, turn this shit off. Like,
that's the stuff I'm not allowed to talk about on the table, like, it just shuts me up because, like, I just want to talk about it.
Like, wait, hold on. Like,
yeah. I always thought, like, doctors were awesome. Mm-hmm. I just never thought it was something that I was able to do. I always thought the only people who became doctors were rich people.
Okay.
One year my parents made, 12 G's for a family of six. So it's like we didn't exactly have like, lucrative upbringing. And I didn't have any knowledge of what it took to even go to medical school at that. And by the time I was a junior in high school, I was already like flunking out. There was already like several required classes I needed to that I had already failed.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like expecting just to fail or just work at like, at the time I was Nautica. I was working at Nautica down in, I don't know if you guys ever heard of La Plaza Las Americas down in San Isidro.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, that's That's where I was working.
Right. Yeah.
It's flourished.
Right. I definitely.
I was at Nautica. Dude, a whole bunch of people used to come from TJ just to go there, like for the clearance stuff and bring it back down to TJ. Right.
Yeah. Not the clearance stuff. Yes.
You know, Bitcoins. What are you talking about?
Seriously, you make a good buck that way.
Yeah.
I was failing. I was also like doing a lot of drugs, unfortunately. I was hanging out with the wrong crowd. And I don't know, like I had a counselor who just sort of like took note of me, thought maybe like, you know, other stuff was probably going on. I'm not really a bad kid. I totally looked like I would have stolen like the stapler off her desk if it wasn't nailed down.
Yeah.
But no, like she just sort of like, you know, checked in with me here and there. See how my day was. There was one day where she actually like took me into her office, had me sat me down on her desk and had me watch this video that she said I should watch, and then like even left me alone in the room, which is funny because I seriously would have jacked everything. This video came on and it was just like the opening, like the trees were parting to a waterfall, the song In the Arms of an Angel was playing. Yeah, right. No, it's just as corny as you can think. And then like words start appearing on the screen saying like, you are worthy, you are loved, you are enough. And, you know, it's the corniest thing you could think of, but I was bawling. Just like the tears were flowing, Niagara Falls, everything. Because like, I don't know, it was a sort of affirmation that I didn't really feel at that point. Yeah. You know, I definitely had like a lot of like really poor self-esteem, depression. I didn't really think that I can really do anything at that point. And so from there, I was able to like, you know, redo those classes my senior year. I did adult school in addition to like regular school while I was working full time.
Okay. Hustler.
I know, right? I was motivated. And one of the reasons was I wanted to do something more.
Okay. So something in you, like junior, like.
Exactly.
In high school was like, something switched.
Yeah.
And it was this counselor.
And exactly. That counselor, like Miss Yamada, like she was definitely like the spark that really kind of like came out here, because it just kind of gave me this sort of like, the sort of self-confidence, self-efficacy that I can actually do something more than what I was thinking at the time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when I did graduate high school, and I was the first of my siblings to actually graduate on time, when I actually did graduate high school, I tried going to community college, but, you know, stuff at home was unfortunately toxic at the time. And I ended up needing to drop out because I was couch surfing. I didn't have a place to live. I ended up like... And then ultimately, I ended up joining the military. So I was a Navy corpsman, which is essentially a medic. And that's where my first introduction into the actual healthcare, business, technically, but the healthcare field, where I essentially worked with submariners in Groton, Connecticut, Rotten Groton. It was so rewarding to be able to like, you know, have a random like dude, like, because I lived in the barracks over there, and a guy like come into the elevator. I don't recognize him. He's like, "Hey, what's up, doc?" I was like, "Who the hell are you?" But like, he was like, "Hey, man, I just want to let you know my ankle's like feeling a whole lot better." So apparently I had like treated him for like a sprained ankle or something. But just that interaction was just like, crap, I can do something that helps people and they appreciate it, but what?
Awesome.
Yeah, so like I started picking the brains of all of the doctors that I've had access to just to kind of figure out. And one of the things that I figured out first that really motivated me, that most doctors are in debt. So I was like, all right, I could take on some debt. Everyone else I know has it. I mean, they gave me some of theirs. So, I just sort of, I went through the military. I was trying to take some community college. I did end up getting transferred to Camp Pendleton. Okay. I did sort of like a Marine Corps type boot camp for corpsmen. And I got attached.
I used to go to Camp Pendleton on.
For what?
Well, for... I have friends.
For facials.
No, totally. Like, they're probably...
But it was back in the, you know, don't ask, don't tell days, because, you know...
That's when I was there. That's exactly...
Oh, yeah. You know, okay, I want to get into some juicy stuff.
No, please do. I'll tell you all about it.
Yes. You know, and if you still have their Instagrams, that'd be great.
They didn't have Instagrams.
They don't have their current Instagram, doctor, or if they're patients, you know, whatever. How was that? Like, you know, because you talked about, you know, your upbringing and stuff, but...
And I was wondering
a little bit about the queer part of that, right? Because, you know, you grew up in the hood and you moved around a lot. And, you know, it sounds like you're really connected to your family. And I think, you know, or in the sense of like, you know, just being there in that system, right? That family system and the things that could happen within that. How was your queer journey and how did that lead you into like medicine and focusing on queer medicine?
Yeah, no, that's actually a way more complicated story.
Okay.
You know, I grew up at a very, very young age, you know, having the Bible being read to us like, you know, every night and whatnot. You know, that, you know, if you were gay, you're going to hell.
Yeah, we all heard that.
Yeah. And, you know, from 4 years old on, like my mom and my sister, they were my sister being 9 years older than me and my mom, you know, being Filipina, like they had their gay friends, you know what I mean? But they were not allowed to come to the house or allowed in the house. Like, that's how it was when I was
so like up. Culturally, like, yes, we have friends. We like hang out maybe outside the house.
Well,
it
was mainly a rule from my dad.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But it's not like a cultural rule.
Exactly.
It's just like
which is funny. Like, you know, the way things work out now, he has two gay sons.
oh, maybe that's all right.
but yeah. So like, I understood that from a very young age. So obviously like, and I knew that, like, you know, because they were like, oh, do you have a crush on this little girl? And in my mind, I'm like, actually, it's not a little girl.
brother. Yeah, girl. Her brother.
Yeah, right? It's like, I didn't think about Ariel. I thought about Eric, yo.
oh, my God. I thought about King Triton.
King Triton, yeah. For sure.
Oh, that Zaddy? Nothing.
Yeah. I have that issues, babe.
Nah, he sounded like an a-hole. He wasn't letting his daughter do nothing. Like, all of his
fun.
That's toxic trait.
Yeah, like, there's red flags on the
right. Right.
The world.
But not like, so, you know, I obviously had like some idea, but then by the time obviously I hit puberty, I was like, oh, yo, what am I going to do? Oh, my dad says it's a choice, so I'm going to choose not to be.
Okay.
So that's essentially what I did, essentially all throughout until I came out when I was 25. So throughout high school, I was in the closet and I did have like, you know, girlfriends and girls that I dated. But, you know, I also had like in between those relationships, because fortunately I had this thing against like cheating on girls. So I made sure that I wasn't in a relationship whenever I went onto that party line.
Oh, party line.
We all know. It's like, what's up, Miss Bayaso? So I'm here, y'all.
What's up, everyone? This is like, leave a message.
Leave a message. Yeah, I'm 5'5". I go to the gym 3 days a week.
that wasn't me, Doc.
I went to the gym.
How old are you right now? If you came out when you were 25, just to get a point of reference.
38.
No. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I'm 38.
What's
so,
up, 30s?
Right, exactly. What's up, osteoporosis?
Okay. Over here. Hold on, I do not have that diagnosis yet.
Yeah. You're lying.
You know what? Yeah,
you don't have the diagnosis because you haven't been eval.
Yes.
But yeah, so like that's essentially how I was. Even like when I was in the military, I did get married to a woman who I like. You know, I've known her for a very long time. And at that time, she had gotten pregnant and she had unstable housing. And she was a friend of mine, a good friend of mine. And I was like, you know, I really want to be able to like help. And, you know, she's pregnant. I'm thinking like, oh, this is my one chance to be able to be a dad without necessarily having to put in the work. Right.
leave it up to a gay to figure out the right.
Unfortunately, homegirl was like manipulator. Like, so I got deployed to Iraq in 2008, and she was due. Yeah, so she was due to like, you know, give birth like in January, and I left in like early January. And then she claimed that she had stillbirths, and that obviously broke me. And being in Iraq, even if like that sort of death would allowed me to come back, and take care of it. But there was no record of it anywhere.
Oh my God.
Because like I couldn't do anything else. I was in Iraq. We barely had access to phones and like some slow ass internet, like 56K and like, you know,
So she was your wife at this
time. Yeah, she was my wife at the time. So, like, ultimately, in the end, what happened was throughout the time that I was there, she was cashing checks in my name. She was like pulling money out of the account. Oh. She was driving my car. She somehow put in 8 months, somehow put 50,000 miles on my car. I still don't know where she was.
Wow.
She apparently moved in her ex-boyfriend into who was baby daddy, actually. But he was also a slanger. So like he slanged meth and weed. And
Dr. Homie, that Dr. Homie part is real. Yes.
So homeboy, like, you know, both of them were pawning apparently a bunch of my stuff. I found out about this initially from it was her friend who was trying to help, but like obviously had a conscience. And said friend is now married to my best friend. So,
oh,
so like it worked out. It worked out.
It's almost like a fairy,
right?
Damn.
So your wife had an ex-wife.
My ex-wife.
Yes. Right. Wife, let's get that right.
Pasada.
Yeah, like, okay. Mm-hmm. Español, I love it.
Claro que sí.
Oh, that's right, because you do it another two.
La mayoría de mis pacientes son mexicanos o Honduras o El Salvador. Entonces,
okay.
Tenía que hablar.
And your background is, just so everyone, the system is clear.
I am half Filipino, half güero.
Okay.
Güero.
Dr. Lyons.
But you were talking about, you know, about her and what was going on. So you were sharing about, I think that's her friend, the one that told you.
Yes.
And that made your best friend. And that's where we left off.
Exactly.
Okay. Continue, because this tea is hot.
Yeah. So the tea's going to continue to get hot. Because essentially, like, yeah. So it was my ex-wife's best friend who notified me, like contacted me, sent me an email saying, hey, because she actually moved into my apartment to kind of like help with things. And so she sent me an email saying she was like moving out and going back to where she was at because, you know, things were going wrong and she felt like it was important that I knew these things. And so she told me about what was going on. Unfortunately, like, I really couldn't do anything about it because
you were serving.
I was in Iraq.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a point where I was finally like where I got an email from her, my ex-wife, saying that she was planning on like leaving, like going and just leaving. Of which case I'm like, okay, I might end up going back to an empty apartment. So I was able to get some like emergency leave. I was able to like go back there and like move out and stuff like that. But then she ended up, when I went back to Iraq, she ended up going to my command saying that I abandoned her and left her homeless.
Which fucks, which obviously it messes fucks with their ranking, right? Now that I know anything about the military or anything like that.
Oh, they're always about the spouse.
Definitely.
Because,
because
the drama that can come from the spouse, you know, because the spouse is a civilian.
Okay.
I represent the military, so or whatever branch I'm in. And so, like, if there's some sort of like qualm or whatnot, like, they got to save face. Right. So it's like, pay them.
It's easier to like take care of them. Like, yes, because like, you are already committed.
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to garnish your wage.
No, they already own you. That's
yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, I had a patient. He was a Navy dude and he like drank a little bit and he actually fell asleep at the beach, got second degree burns from it. And because he ended up missing work, he got charged with destruction of government property. He was the property. Yeah, that is how it is. That is how it is.
That is wild.
That is how it is.
Wild.
Yeah, you lose work because of an issue that you messed up. It is your fault, and therefore you get charged. That is how they are.
That's our country. Okay, so how do you go from that to participating in sword fighting other men?
Anal sex.
How does it get gay? Doctor, how does this story take the gay turn?
The gay turn happened like when I was in my last year in the military. Dated one more girl.
Okay.
And someone outed me.
Okay.
Someone outed me. And
to her?
To her.
Okay.
And like all
so
of her friends.
So she
did not. She did not.
Okay.
But at the same time, like I never was with anybody else when I was actually in a relationship.
Yeah.
But like this person ended up like saying, oh, this person, or saying like, you know, essentially that I hook up with dudes.
Okay.
I don't know if he ever like put the context of like not while I was with her, but it didn't matter.
Okay.
And then at that time, like,
oh, you know, you were hooking up with dudes then.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was
but
still
not while you were with her.
No,
when I was in a relationship.
Because he's very not a cute.
Yeah,
even not about
sure. Your yeah.
No, that's true. Don't be like that.
But not like that sort of experience gave me the epiphany that I did not want to be a Lifetime movie. You know, like I did not want to like go 20 years, have a full family, and like all of a sudden I'm just like, I can't take it anymore and be like, I'm gay.
Yeah. Then, no, like, that quote alone, the Lifetime quote told me, Doctor, you're gay. Like I was like, yeah, right? That was a very gay quote. Like he was like, Lifetime movie. Yeah, that's just yeah. True. Yeah, yeah.
Was it because like I've only seen it because my mom watches it and that's days that I faked being sick. To school, okay. I would stay home and my mom would watch The Young and the Restless, The Bold and the
you
Beautiful.
Just happen to hang out
and I happened to hang
out. You're little black.
Which one?
No, like, those Latinos do that too. Like, it's
for sure.
Yeah. I'm like,
those telenovelas.
Like, I spend the whole day with my mom, she's meandering, and I'm like, yep, this is my little homosexual life right now.
I mean, dude, they have like in the Philippines, like, there are telenovelas and they all are exactly the same as like the same. So it's like you have the girl and the guy who like love each other so much, but you have like the evil mom who's like doesn't want them to be together. Yeah, exactly. And she always wears like and she always wears like a ton of eye makeup, you know what I mean? And then there's always like a super flamboyant gay dude.
Oh, yes. That's Alejandro.
Super flamboyant.
Yeah, that's he's Alejandro. That one.
Hello.
Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, so I didn't want to do that. So that was like the start of me coming out and the last girl I dated.
Okay.
And so, yeah, like I got out of the military the end of that year and I went back to community college, transferred to college at San Diego State and somehow got into UCLA for medical school.
Somehow you busted your ass. The stories you told.
It doesn't matter, dude. Busting my ass or not, like people like get into it with way different things. Like, for example,
okay,
everyone.
Give us a real tea.
Oh, dude, when I was at UCLA, it was a culture shock. First of all, the fact that everybody said partner, I was like, are you all gay? I was like, really? Really? Oh, what? But then I found out.
I'm excited.
Right?
Imagine him straight out. Like, he's like, wait, are you gay? Oh my God, this is
it's
perfect.
The Twilight Zone. Yeah.
You know, I just say, you know, so it's always a six pack and a couple of shots away. So
seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously.
But not like, so there was that part. But then there was also the whole, what do your parents do? Oh, hi, nice to meet you. Like, where did you go to college? It was all of that. I still remember like my third year of medical school. I'm rotating at Kaiser and my attending just asked me, oh, where'd you go for undergrad? And I said, San Diego State. He's like, wow, you know, I've actually had a medical student every 2 weeks since 1991. And you're maybe like the third who didn't go to an Ivy League. Mm. And I was just like, thanks. Yeah. Like, damn, thanks. Should like, I say thanks?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Am I like the flower that grew out of a pot of dirt or something? Like,
yeah.
I was like, thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate that. So yeah, it was a total culture shock. And not to mention, like, me having come from a very low-income background.
Yeah.
I still remember, like, being in this one small group where we have to, like, discuss cases. And we talked about, smoking, like, the average age of, like, starting to smoke. And the median age was, like, 11. And, you know, the group was just like, oh, my God, is that real? He's like, no, it's been pretty consistent. And then one person was like, well, is that just in low-income communities? And I wanted to jump over the table and just...
and be like, let me give you some
exactly. so yeah, it was definitely a huge, like, you know, a little bit of a slap in the face, huge culture shock, and hence the whole imposter syndrome that I have mentioned many times because dude, I felt like I didn't belong. But there was a program there that was very much geared towards community medicine, and the majority of them were from the hood.
Okay,
so like there was 180 students in my class, and they were about 30. I wasn't part of their program, but their program was like in our classes, and so I just kicked it with them because, you know, they were awesome.
It's the people you're related to.
Exactly. That was my people. That was my people. So yeah, like that made it definitely a lot easier to get through med school. As a matter of fact, one of them ended up like going to residency with me. And, you know, we're still in very close contact. She's a doctor in North Hollywood.
Okay. What's up, Ali?
Right. So I ended up, you know, getting out of med school, going to residency, and somehow finished and actually became a doctor.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. First of all, yeah, congratulations.
And thank you for sharing so much.
But tell us about the LGBT conference or...
Oh, yeah. So when I was in medical school, it started when I was undergrad. I went to UCSF because they had an LGBT health conference and I'd never been to one. And everything up to that point, because I didn't come out of the closet until I was 25. So okay. I was like completely...
After the military, right?
Exactly. Yeah, after the military. Okay. So I was completely ignorant to a lot of LGBT issues because I was able to avoid them because I was in the closet. And obviously I was also privy to all of the homophobia in the military because, you know, hey, I was like, you know, they talked to me. I went to this conference and I thought it was amazing that they talked about all sorts of issues and all of the disparities that unfortunately are suffered by the LGBT community, by the queer community. And I was just like, you know, why isn't this thing available? Because I don't want to drive 12 hours to go to San Francisco and do this. So when I was in med school, I did meet up with someone who had put on a conference. Unfortunately, that didn't continue, and he was able to mentor me. His name was Mike Hamer, and I, you know, started like, you know, working on it myself. I recruited a few people to help put together the Southern California LGBT Health Conference, which was run by and organized by medical students in various med schools. So the first year was like Western, UCLA, and Keck. After that, they expanded it to like UCI, UC Riverside, UCSD. And then after that, they just expanded it to all medical schools in Southern California. And they sort of like switch from like one medical school to the next in terms of where it's hosted. And they talk about all sorts of medical issues that are suffered in the medical community, not just HIV, because...
Right.
Yes, HIV is a very, very important part that needs to be addressed always. And it is something that is suffered, unfortunately, by the LGBT community. But it is not the only thing.
Right.
It just isn't. It was a great conference. It continues up to this day. I'm very, very proud that they're continuing it. That was just like such a big deal for me because I was able to help bring just much more awareness and education regarding LGBT health issues to the masses.
That's amazing. I think just hearing you go from sharing your story of like being in the closet and the things you experience, right? Like, you know, things that happen a lot of times in the community where we have to play these roles, right? And like getting married or like having girlfriends and then getting in these situations that aren't favorable and add to the trauma, right?
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that and for being so open. And I see how a lot of that has really led you in the work that you do now and that you are currently working on. So that's amazing.
Yeah, so I just want to share with everyone that we posted on our Three Brown Jotos Instagram and our personal pages. We posted some questions to ask Dr. Homie, and I want to get into one of these questions. And the first question I want to get into is we posted on our pages, you know, what is something you would like to ask Dr. Homie specifically? And one question that I got is from a med student who is queer and brown. And so their question for you is, what's it like being queer in medicine?
So it does differ from person to person. For me, it's a lot of correcting people. It's like, you know, because I right now I'm telling a lot of people, it's like, oh yeah, I'm about to have my baby in a couple of weeks. And they're like, oh, what does your wife do? I was like, well, my husband.
Yes, that's right.
Mi esposo. So that happens a good amount. Especially when things get said around me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not like I'm like going in with my rainbow ball cap or anything like that. Like, people will say something if they assume that the company is straight, and they'll make like gay jokes or whatnot. So every once in a while there was that.
Yeah.
And then, but other than that, it's actually pretty awesome. The reason I say that is because the majority of physicians, the large majority of physicians actually are very supportive of the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's like, whether or not they will, you know, believe it. Some people will say like, you know, I support human rights, but I do have my religious affiliations. You know, they just sort of like either keep it separate or they rationalize it by like, you know, I'm just all about like people living and being happy and not no evil being done on them. But in general, it's just very, very supportive. And this is new because it's not been like this the whole time. As a matter of fact, when I was applying to medical school, I purposely did not apply to Loma Linda because they had in their bylaws that you could not, you know, that homosexual acts was forbidden.
What?
Essentially. Yeah, no, right?
When, what year was this?
This was 2013.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And we think things change, mm-hmm. but no, things are like...
I mean, they still don't eat like chicken or meat over there either, so...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But I ended up going to residency at White Memorial Medical Center, which is a Seventh-day Adventist hospital. And
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I grew up being around White Memorial.
Yeah,
when in my grad school, I was going to do my internship there. And I didn't do it because
they're Seventh-day Adventist.
So during my,
is this the one that you did that whole stuff?
So during my interview for my, I told them like, oh, I did some research and I know you guys are like funded by the Seventh-day Adventist. And traditionally you guys are not for like
gay
homosexuality,
people.
Gay people. Like, how has that affected your culture? And they looked at me like, what the fuck? Like, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
So I just told them, like, I just don't know that my values right there align with your values. Mm-hmm. You know?
And fortunately, on that note, one of the first things that really, like, surprised me when I went there was because...
Doctors were gay.
I know, right? I mean, there were a lot. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Not a lot, but, like, just... They were identifiable. They were identifiable.
Like, do they cinch their lab coats? Is that what happened?
Oh, dude, yeah, those figs. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, of course.
Okay.
They were, like, the first to bring it on. I mean, dude, like, you know, fitted anything is gay appropriation.
Shout out to all the gay doctors.
But no, like, one of the first things that I had noticed, because I had to, like, fill out, like, you know, paperwork and also get registered with the clinic over there, they actually asked about gender identity. Like, gender identity and sexual orientation. The fact that they were asking, I was like, wait a minute, what? This was a good thing. Like,
okay. It wasn't a setup.
No.
Okay.
It was like something that was very much. And then I started noticing like the posters about like why it's important to know gender identity and sexual orientation.
Like pronouns.
Exactly. It was just like, okay, this is different. And then I had asked about that like during some of like the interviews and like people who were already there. You know, they were definitely specifically at White Memorial, they were a little bit more progressive. So, for example, they had chicken and fish. They had chicken and fish. So, hey, you know, that's pretty progressive.
And it was in East LA, so you know it was a pescado salandiao.
Right?
Oh, dude.
I mean, how about you?
The pozole they had over there, is the bomb. And they always have it like once a week and everybody got
like
it.
Like I was saying, outside of White Memorial, se caspollo, like rosita. Like,
but not like I very much appreciated White Memorial. They were very supportive.
That's
and
awesome.
Not all residencies are. So that's what for the med student, and not all med schools are either. I have unfortunately heard enough stories to know that like they're not all supportive. And this is not even just about LGBT, but this is also about people of color. Like some places just aren't. So it does vary, you know. So for anybody who is trying to determine like what things are going to be like based on where they're going to go, they can easily do research on it. Reddit has a whole lot of words about it.
Yeah. Or you can go on Instagram and ask Dr. Homie. I'm sure he has time to meet all his patients.
Oh,
and
dude,
all this
absolutely.
Stuff.
I absolutely encourage anyone who wants to hear it real. I'll give it to him.
So we got another question for you. This person said or asked, "How do I
charge by the hour?" By the way.
Oh. Okay, he says South Central, baby. We can play about our coin.
Yeah, Medi-Cal.
Right.
Blue Shield. What's up?
Charlie and his man have money, so they
got pay out of cash. Cash only.
I suggest you speak to Charlie.
We'll pay you in other ways.
Oh, I forgot about that other bank they had.
Nope. Money greener. Green. Okay. I need that green because okay. the rest of it, no, yeah. you can buy it.
You're the one that started offering, bitch. He's just responding, though.
Okay, this question says, how do I find a doctor that's familiar with LGBT issues?
Okay, so
where can people go find a directory of gay doctors? Or
so unfortunately, there is not a central directory.
By insurance, right?
Definitely not with insurance. I mean, like a central directory, say, for example, in LA.
Right.
Okay. I mean, there is one like that's growing that the GLMA, the Gay Lesbian Medical Association, they're like growing and they have a directory on their website. But it frequently, I don't know if it's as up to date as it wasn't before. But again, like it doesn't include everyone. Typically, someone has to like pay to be on it, or they have to reach out to find out like, you know, who is supportive. And at the same time, you just never know.
Yeah.
And this is unfortunate about like every aspect of finding a good doctor, whether you're looking for someone who has good bedside manner or not. And so there's unfortunately no central like directory for it.
Well, you know, I think that's a really good question because, you know, we work in public health and we're connected to the HIV world, right? And I think you made a really valid point earlier about how a lot of the times when we talk about LGBTQI plus health, it centers around HIV prevention and HIV care, right? And we don't really talk about all the other things that are important, right? Like if you're having anal sex, what are those checkups that you need to do, right? And how frequently? But I also, I like the part where you were talking about how you really talk to your clients, or you really connect with your clients, or at least that's what I was getting from that experience, right? That you really connect with your clients. And how is that, you know, growing up, you know, in the hood and going back and working in the hood and you know, and maybe in the journey of like now being a queer doctor, and how are you able to connect with it? If you do see like a lot of queer patients, or, you know, like, you know, do you clock them? You're like, wait, girl,
I think, you know,
because we have a lot of resources, right? We talk as far as like, you know, there's a LGBT center. There's a lot of organizations that provide specific LGBTQIA plus healthcare, but not everyone in community wants to go to those spaces.
And not everyone can.
Exactly.
Right. Or also not just queer men, but what about trans individuals?
Yeah,
or
trans individuals, lesbian, bisexual, like pan, non-binary, like, yeah, all of them. And, you know, we are everywhere, regardless of like what people think. You know, straight people make us, and there's a lot of straight people everywhere.
Too many, if you ask
me. I know, right?
But yes.
Apparently, new research is showing that there's actually less straight people and queer people.
Oh my
God. Yeah. You know, look that up. It's interesting. It's interesting.
Porn I've been watching television.
Pegging.
Nobody.
Beefcake Hunter? No.
Yeah. Oh, Beefcake Hunter.
Okay, doctor, but you know.
I don't know about Beefcake Hunter. I don't know about Beefcake Hunter. That's a new one. I know about Rawr, R-A-W-R.
Oh my God, I haven't heard of that one, but I haven't heard that one either.
Yeah. But, and then there was like,
but you know, look at us talking about healthcare at the same time.
It's absolutely
appropriate. Welcome to the 3 Brown Huddles
podcast. We like discuss like DoxyPep. So, there you go.
Yes.
And masturbation is healthy, y'all.
So. Masturbation is very healthy, but there is a limit.
A limit? What? What's the limit?
I just had my meatballs.
So it varies. And I'm sure y'all heard of, or maybe you haven't, but like the whole NoFap movement. Have you heard of that?
No.
Okay, so NoFap was a movement that has been going on for, a decade, maybe longer, of men avoiding porn and masturbation. And the reason for that is...
I heard it is not.
And some things that, like, you know, research does support is that there has been a significantly increased rate of impotence in men in their 20s and 30s, which is absolutely bizarre. And it sort of correlates with the rise of high-speed internet. So that's,
you know what? I can see those connections, doctor. Yeah.
And so like if you have someone who is you know, going on, you know, going online, watching porn, getting every single scene that they want whenever they want, or changing it up whenever they want, and getting those exact things that they're looking for. Yeah.
I feel very attacked right now. Then, they're getting at each other like
really? Ah, interesting.
It's
like let me tell you, all right, give you you know, not necessarily applying to y'all because I don't know what you guys do. But yeah, essentially if you get those exact, like you get exactly what you need from porn, you're not gonna get it exactly from the real life.
Oh sex. Yeah. You have to separate reality from fantasy.
And not everybody does that.
Okay.
So,
my boyfriend.
And have you ever heard of the death grip?
Yes. Yes, I feel like I feel like
that is another. Yeah, all of these are like reasons why like a lot of men aren't able to perform as well.
Okay,
in
yeah.
real actual sex because of a little bit of overindulgence.
So, what's an unhealthy amount of times? Oh, to dude, I've had
it varies because like honestly, some people who have like a super high sex drive and obviously are able to like separate those two have no issues.
Okay.
Oh, you're fine.
Yeah. I guess practice makes perfect. I don't know.
Damn. Not a swinging recording a podcast and getting diagnosed, man. It's like, I cannot. Okay. Yes.
I don't even know where we started.
We're talking about White Memorial or like the church, and then all of a sudden it turns
into masturbation.
All of a sudden, me and Charlie felt attacked. It's a certain church. I was like, okay.
Well, it kind of leads us to another question that we asked our audience, which was, what was people's biggest health concern today? And someone did mention aging and its consequences internally, you know, speaking of like body breakdown, sexual drive. And so this kind of correlates with what you just said as far as like the excess of porn and masturbation.
Yeah.
So what are some of the concerns in the queer community around aging and like what that's like?
Yeah, no. So one thing that is really unfortunate and, you know, actually, you know, regardless of how much porn they watch. But one thing that has been actually happening is, especially for a lot of the older generation, going back into the closet because of some of the facilities that, you know, they go to and a lot of the staff members and everyone kind of essentially being either not educated, not informed, or just straight up homophobic and religious. And so because of that, and because they don't want to like lose the care, the only care that they can get, sometimes they have to end up going back into the closet.
That's such a shame that we have to go through that in 2023,
right?
But I can understand that as an older generation, like as we have our older queer people who are like phasing out, like, you know, think of the are people who go to temple who are older, right? And like have that fear of like, or who aren't out necessarily fully to everyone. But when you're getting judged in a medical facility, whether it's the front office, back office, providers, nurses, whoever it is, like, it's going to make you think twice about how you are either identifying with your doctors or you're not identifying with your doctors.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the time for us three, especially, right, because of the work that we do, we work in such an environment where we have the privilege where we have these conversations, right? Or at least for me, right? I think the institution that I work at, I think is very on top of like all these things, right? Of like making sure that we're respecting people's pronouns, that we're providing gender affirming care. And I think, you know, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, doctor, for you, who you work at a smaller like family clinic in the middle of the hood, the priority is not like, hey, let us get progressive and like talk about like gender affirming care and all. You know, I'm not saying that that's your institution, but I think a lot of these places, right, that might be familiar to yours, you know, their thing is like, how do we like, you know, how do we service people best, right? And it's not necessarily around identity or gender or sexuality. So we work in a space where we do these. We have these workshops. We have, you know, my job, like we start sometimes at 8 a.m. and the first thing we're doing is, hey, like we're going to do a gender affirming care workshop and talk about all these new pronouns and stuff. So how are you able to create that space for folks in the work that you do and the way that you provide care?
I mean, it's... interestingly enough, despite what many providers and many people in the healthcare field think, it ain't that hard. Period. Sure. It just ain't that difficult. Like, all you got to do is be respectful And if you don't get the pronouns right, you get it right the next time. You ask them, you tell them, I'm learning. You tell them, like, this is new for me. And just the fact that you actually go out there and say that and, you know, hey, you're trying to respect the pronouns. You're actually being a little vulnerable that you don't know them completely. The amount of respect that you'll get back is so huge.
100%.
And people don't realize it. All you got to do is literally be a respectful person.
Amen.
I mean, all you have to show is that you care.
Exactly.
Honest caring, you know. I think
or that, respect.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Yeah. One thing, so I have a bunch of buttons for Dr. Homie. And one of them, I say, be a homie, then be a doctor.
Mm. Okay, what does that mean, doctor?
Yeah, tell us more about that. Yeah.
So I've noticed both in medical school and in residency how much of an emphasis they put on not getting too close. Mm. And I get that, but I feel like some people take it to an extreme to where they shouldn't get close at all because they were told not to.
Well, our health system is a business.
Oh, God.
We're not in a business to keep people healthy.
No.
We're in a business to keep people medicated, with pharmaceuticals. So I can understand why they tell doctors that.
Yeah. But fortunately, and I'm hoping that that idea is changing because at least in California, huge push in California is preventative care. Hence the reason why they've increased incomes for family practice and preventative care. They've increased access to preventative care. So the hope is that we don't have to spend.
And we see that we see that in our HIV world, right? With the large investments there's been in prevention services over the years and just even in support groups and things like that.
Yeah. It's just so not difficult to be able to provide culturally appropriate and sensitive care.
Yeah.
All you got to do is either be respectful and ask their preferences.
And you said something very valid, and I'm sorry, Charlie, just real quick. You said something that a lot of the schools, right? It really starts at the schools and the way that they're educating providers and doctors, right? And it's really, like you said, I love that you talk to our audience and talk to them about the importance of doing their research, right?
Yes.
And also just the story of we think about how conventionally, when we think about someone who's going to become a doctor, right? It's it's usually that person that has that 4.0 GPA and they are.
Oh, what I graduated in high school with?
One doctor.
2.3.
What?
Woo! Okay, what's yeah. That 2.3, I made it.
Thriving doctor.
I crossed that stage. I'm good.
So I know we asked our listeners what are their most pressing health concerns. What would you say is the most pressing health concerns for LGBT patients that you've seen?
Oh, God. Unfortunately, it's still mental health.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
It's still mental health.
That's actually one of the questions that we asked.
Yeah.
Yeah. We asked, how comfortable are you talking to your doctor about your mental health?
Yes.
And we had a very.
So actually 79% do feel comfortable.
And
there's still 21% that doesn't.
Yeah. No, that's a good. That is 1 out of 5. And that's really, really unfortunate. And I'm sure all of y'all have seen it, but not all doctors really get people.
Yeah.
Not all doctors know how to talk or interact with people.
I believe that.
You haven't seen it?
Yeah.
No, I said I believe that.
Oh, yeah.
I've had the experiences where I've been in doctor's office and I feel like they genuinely care and that it's about building a relationship and a connection with me as a human and as a person. And I've been in doctor's office where I'm like, oh, they're just trying to fix me. They're just like, hey, come in. We're going to do what we have to do. Boom, boom, boom. It's out. And it feels very transactional.
I mean, at least you feel like they're going to fix you. I mean, most of the times it's like they're just going to put a Band-Aid on you and then send you out
or
the
a finger.
Door. Yeah.
I know.
We don't do the finger no more. It's not recommended.
Oh, no, but our friend,
he screening.
Goes to the doctors, but those are just his friends that are doctors.
Got it.
Hey, so what do you do if you don't
Well, I mean, the finger is only if it's indicated. There's some reason that we suspect that we should do the finger, but it used to be something where we did the finger on everyone.
I know.
But now we don't.
Charlie specifically.
Oh, dude, that's how we learned in med school, too.
No,
it was a volunteer.
Volunteer.
He taught us exactly what's up. We have to turn like that. And yeah.
Charlie's at the dentist. He's like, wait, when's the finger going in?
On Pornhub, the doctors always do it.
They ain't real doctors. I don't know if you knew about that.
Oh, no, don't tell that to my friend. Let him live in this fantasy.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Some of them are real doctors.
Yeah, but probably, yeah. But no, you know, doctor, thank you so much for answering these questions. You know, first of all, thank you for being so vulnerable because I think,
I'm
not vulnerable.
Okay, well,
like I got my strong exterior. Okay. I'm good.
Sorry, aggressive top. But you know, I think a lot of the times when we, like, you know, culturally, right? I'll talk about my culture being Mexicano and brown. When we think about doctors, there's respect and authority, right? Because you've done so, and it's real. You've done so much work to get yourself to that position, and it's so refreshing to be able to talk to you and have this conversation. You know, we're kicking back a couple of little drinks here. You know, for people that can't watch us and stuff. So that's why it's to get in a little bit more open. Right. Yeah. You know, and then, totally. Not that it was our strategy to get your buzz, doctor, but now we're going to play a game with where we're going to ask you some questions. Yeah, some fun questions. Yeah, so y'all go first because I'm thinking about my questions.
So we ask these questions to every guest.
Okay.
Including ourselves. But yes. So these are rapid fire questions. And,
rapid fire.
Yes.
Okay.
I want to know, because you're on social media, because, you know, you're the doctor homie and you do social media videos, what's been your most awkward social media encounter? I mean, you're an attractive guy. You're queer.
That has been the most awkward. Absolutely. 100%.
What does stethoscope taste like? Did I say that correctly? Doctor, please tell me I said that correctly. Yeah, did I?
Or like,
you probably
hopefully. Can you do a cavity check on me?
Which cavity? Because technically the abdomen is a cavity, by the way.
That's a big ass cavity.
She has a lot of.
You ever seen Indiana Jones or Bumshabag? You know?
She was actually Indiana Jones. La pelota. You see that thing that Indiana Jones was running away from? That was her.
Dang. Yes, that was me. Okay. 15 seconds of fame. Yes.
Damn.
Love it. Okay. Doctor,
yes. So tell us the story.
Yeah.
Again, don't be trying to ask a question. Well, look at you.
No, it's not like it's one story. It's just like a bunch of messages like that.
Like, has anyone ever sent you a picture of their ass and they're like, doctor, what is this?
Thankfully, no.
Okay.
Because, like, it's a gay. Yeah.
No.
Thankfully, no. Because I still get the question on whether or not I'm gay.
What do you mean?
You're happy.
I have a rainbow hat.
We can assume people like wearing rainbows. Like,
rainbows and happiness.
Yeah.
There was a rainbow over Dodger Stadium yesterday. So. Yeah.
Whatever.
You get asked, like, are you?
I do. Yeah, I do. I do. And so that's always weird. And then obviously there's also like the a-hole people that I just delete.
Yeah.
But
how is it dealing with that? Like, because, you know, you're openly a queer doctor, you know, and on social media, you're very open about the conversation. And I love your content, by the way.
Thank you.
Created this really awesome video around STIs. And it's like you and it's like you peeing and it's like burning and it's all these like so good, you know, and it's such a fun way about talking about things that are important in our community, you know. But how do you deal with, like, when you get negative stuff or homophobic stuff?
I mean, I literally just delete them, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't affect me, because it does, like, especially if they come like back to back. Of course it's gonna affect me. It just kind of like makes me feel like shit.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's like one of those things where it just brings back all the trauma. I'm gonna go to hell. I'm not like someone who's worth living. You know, the Pulse nightclub shooting, for crying out loud. Like, all of that just comes into mind when someone calls me a pedophile.
Yeah.
When someone says that, like, I'm an FAG or something like that.
Right.
So, like, all of that, yeah, sure, it totally affects me, but hence that hard exterior I'm talking about. Like,
so what do you like to do to take care of yourself? Like, what is it that the doctor homie gets into to help with deal with all that stuff?
Someone mentioned earlier karaoke.
Oh, okay.
I love me some karaoke.
Tell me you're Filipino without telling me.
I was just going to say. Exactly.
I'm assuming you do a great Whitney Houston.
Is there a magic mic at home now?
No.
Oh.
No. I actually have never enjoyed the magic mic. I did not like the Nokia ringtone that they have on it. I had to get myself some. I'm not into karaoke rooms, which is very, very traditionally Asian. Okay. I am into karaoke bars. The smaller, the better. Because this is where, like, all the regulars who, like,
such
you know.
Such a hood rat, doctor.
What can I say? I'm a hoodie. What can I say? But yeah, like, I like being around that, like, community of people, because it doesn't matter, like, if you can sing or if you can't. Like, if you can't, they sing along with you. If you do, they cheer you on.
And then everybody's fucked up, right? It's a bar.
Exactly. Like, actually, I started doing karaoke when I was, like, 24, 25, in order to get over stage fright.
What?
Yeah, because I still get it. I still get stage fright. But, like, by going up in front of a bunch of people and singing like a dumbass, like,
yeah,
that's a good way to, like, kind of get over it. It's exposure therapy, by the way.
Okay, doctor.
So I have a question for you. So when people role play, they usually do, like, a doctor or a teacher. My question for you is, you being a doctor, what are you and your husband, or do you guys role play? And if you do, well, I mean, you can't be a doctor.
Technically, I haven't.
You're already a doctor.
Technically, it doesn't count as role playing.
Oh, okay, baby.
Just wear the white coat in bed.
That's what we're trying to get to, doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, I come home in scrubs every day, so.
Okay.
I come home in scrubs every day, like, or I come home in, like, the full doctor, like, dressed in business professional with a white coat over it. So
does
your husband ever wear the white coat and you're the patient?
No.
Oh, okay. Excuse me?
Oh, not by my choice.
Oh. Wait, doctor, what's your sign?
Leo.
Oh, okay. Leo's okay. I see. Okay, you have a Leo tattoo. That's very Leo also. And you're a lion. Like, it just goes.
And my last name is Lion. I know, right?
Doctor, I have a question. And it's not related to health or medicine or wellness, but it's related to homosexuality.
Oh, shit.
Did you ever have fun with other military men while you were in the military?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What
was the most fun you had? Was it in Iraq or was it here in Camp Pendleton? Because I feel like in my head, right? And in my years of research on the internet,
it was Pendleton.
Yeah, it was definitely Pendleton.
Not like definitely. In the middle of war, like nothing.
No.
Okay.
Well, you're a little worried about other things. Exactly. I want to actually say something about that. You don't shower, you don't bathe.
Yeah.
You know,
no poppers.
Freaking Grey's Anatomy. I can't stand that show because nobody would have sex in a hospital. It is disgusting. It is gross. You're covered in MRSA, C. diff, and like all that stuff. So, like, yeah, you're gross and nasty and sweaty in Iraq. You're going to be gross, nasty, and sweaty in a hospital, too.
Doctor, I don't want to be the one to have to tell you, doctor, but we don't yuck anyone's yum. What if someone's like, give me some of that sweet placenta that's on your screen?
Oh, yes. I've actually had a patient. I've had like a couple because they were having a baby.
Okay.
Bring their blender and the frozen fruit to.
Okay. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
And of course,
it was at UCLA too.
Definitely. On that note, where can our audience find you? Where can we look you up? Listen to you? Follow you? What's up?
I mean, I don't know, like, are your audience stalkers? Because the internet's a pretty good resource to figure that out.
No,
your handles.
But no, like, so.
Our audience are very committed and loyal. We love them.
Yeah, I'm glad.
We see them out in the streets and they say awesome. Hi. We love to say, so if you see somebody, Dr. Homie, you know.
For sure. No, but like, I am on all the social media. So like Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. On Instagram, I'm the Dr. Homie because apparently someone else decided to sell kitchen accessories under Dr. Homie. I don't know. And then TikTok is just Dr. Homie. And it's spelled out doctor. So D-O-C-T-O-R Homie, H-O-M-I-E. And then I actually have my website that has a connection to everything, www.drhomie.org.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Doctor, for being with us. I feel like
thank you.
I feel like there's another episode coming with you.
I'm glad
because I want to know more about like where the Dr. Homie thing came from and everything. And this is like a teaser, like right? Like, I feel like this is a part one. And obviously, like there's a lot of stories that we could share about Ken Pendleton, baby.
Yeah.
Well, with that said, this has been another excellent episode of the Three Brown Hotos.
Three Brown Hotos out. This has been another episode of the Three Brown Hotos. As always, we want to thank all of our listeners and supporters. Please make sure to follow us on www.3brownhotos.com. Ahí nos vemos.